4:27-28.
Maya nirupitas tubhyam.
Maya nirupitas tubhyam.
Patiratma samadina.
Patiratma samadina.
Nabi nandati lokoyam.
Tvamabhadram asammatam. Tvamabhadram asammatam.
Maya.
Maya.
By me.
Nirupita.
Nirupita. Settled.
Settled.
Tubhyam.
Tubhyam.
For you.
For you.
Pati.
Pati.
Husband.
Husband.
Atma.
Atma.
Of the mind.
Of the mind.
Samadhina.
Samadhina.
By meditation.
By meditation.
Na.
Na.
Never.
Never.
Avinandati.
Avinandati.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Lokaha.
Lokaha.
The people.
The people.
I am.
I am.
These.
These.
Tvam. You.
You.
Abhadram.
Abhadram.
Inauspicious.
Inauspicious.
Asamatam.
Asamatam.
Unacceptable.
Unacceptable.
The king of the Yavanas replied, after much consideration, I have arrived as a husband for you. Actually, as far as everyone is concerned, you are inauspicious and mischievous. Since no one likes you, how can anyone accept you as his wife? Purport. After much consideration, the king of the Yavanas decided to make the best use of a bad bargain. Kalakanya was a bad bargain and no one liked her. But everything can be used for the service of the Lord. Thus the king of the Yavanas tried to utilize her for some purpose. The purpose has already been explained. That is, Kalakanya's jara, the invalidity of old age, can be used to arouse a sense of fear in people so that they will prepare for the next life by engaging in Krishna consciousness. So the Bhagavad Gita states, Abhyasa yogi yuktena chetasananyagamina paramam purusham divyam yati partimasintayam. That one must practice spiritual life. Well, that is the only way that one can be expected to remember the Supreme Lord at the end of life. And this regular practice, known as sadhana bhakti, is a tapasya. That is tapo divyam putrakiyena sattvam sujityasma pramasukyam tanantam. Although in the Bhagavad Gita it is said rajavidam rajagudyam, and there it is said devotional service is susukam, it is joyfully performed, we should understand that some joy may be there. And Prabhupada said in the beginning the joy comes from the service, and later the joy comes from the relationship with Krishna. So when the joy comes from the service, then that joy is not constant. Then sometimes it may be joyful, sometimes it may not be joyful, depending on our state of mind and how we are affected by the three modes of material nature. Therefore, tapo divyam putrakiye sattva. Therefore, a sense of austerity has to be there. It is interesting that in a lot of lectures we have emphasized the need for taste. There's no doubt that we need that higher taste. But at the same time, and then people say, but the taste is not coming. I'm not getting the taste. Now what is there? I'm doing something wrong. No. Nothing wrong. It is simply expect. It starts with austerity. The taste comes sometimes, like the sun comes through the clouds. But we start with a clouded sky, and it will take some time for the clouds to clear up. Then the taste will be constant. You know? But that stage of ruchi is the way it is described. Ruchi is a very advanced state of Krishna consciousness. It is in the advanced madhyamadhikari state that ruchi is attained. And in that state, it is said, the entire consciousness becomes like overwhelmed by ruchi, and it touches every aspect of our service. So it's always done with taste. So who can say that how many devotees can claim susukam kartimavyam in that sense? Therefore, it takes some time to go beyond the sense of duty and austerity. And that is the difficulty, that in this age of Kali, the legs of the Buldanga have been broken, and the leg of austerity has also been broken. So we don't have much capacity to live for an idea, to live for a philosophical conclusion, if we don't feel it. That is the difficulty. We Kalo Sudha Sambhava, in the age of Kali, everyone is a Sudra, means that everyone wants to be very closely connected to their feelings. Whereas the higher castes, the higher positions, Brahma or higher Varnas, Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, they live for Dharma. Like you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. How can you lament, O Arjuna? You simply have to do your duty. So you're acting like an ordinary man. An ordinary man, in other words, is lamenting, hankering and lamenting. Anyway, that really makes it clear to us that we are ordinary men. That's all we can say, nothing else. And so it's not that we are sitting here condemning anyone who is an ordinary man. It's more like, well, let's face reality. We are ordinary men, we are hankering and lamenting, and now what? But at least we should not have false expectations, and that immediately all the taste is supposed to come. It takes regular practice, done on the basis of intelligence. Like someone told me, like, I just can't chant anymore because I have no taste for chanting. But that has nothing to do with it. That has nothing to do with this. This chanting, it Prabhupada explained, is the rope. It's the rope that saves you from drowning in the ocean of nescience. It may be painful, that rope. It may not be so comfortable. No? But it's going to save us. So what to do at the time of an emergency? You can't just expect, only a rope. I mean, don't you have something more comfortable? It's like, grab whatever you can. So... therefore, we have to become more aware of our predicament. Sometimes our position is compared to ants that are moving around on a wooden log, but it's burning at the ends. And the ends are in the middle of the log, and it's big enough. So the fire is not immediately affecting them yet. But we can see it's burning. It's burning. Get off that log. Well, it's okay. Why I have to get off this log? It's okay. You know, it's a good log. There are many nice holes and cracks and all kinds of things. You like it? You know? I mean, what's the problem? It's burning. You know, it soon will be finished. It's going to turn to ashes, and you'll burn with it. So, therefore, practice is required. And part of that practice is what Krishna offers Arjuna, which is Udaradi, the broader intelligence. And the broader intelligence means to see the eternal perspective immediately. Whatever situation we're in, put the eternal perspective next to it. That is the second chapter of the Gita. That's the first answer Arjuna receives from Krishna. Look at whatever the situation is, look at the eternal perspective. And it does make things a bit more relative. It does help. One can think, okay, you know, this isn't unbearable situation, but it is temporary. And then, of course, sometimes people don't care. They don't care. It's like, I don't want philosophy. I want it to stop now. I want this situation to stop right now. And then in such situations, some people in despair even commit suicide with the idea that I can just turn it off, the suffering. But that, of course, once we have transcendental knowledge, we realize that's not an option. That will only perpetuate the suffering much longer, because then one has to remain in a subtle body even longer than one would suffer in the current body. Anyway, here we are looking at time. Time is a factor. And obviously, time is bringing us to Krishna. Time, Srila Prabhupada is in two purports, yesterday and today, emphasizing that time, old age, the daughter of time, is arousing a sense of fear in people who will then start preparing for the next life. Yes, and we just elaborated a little. Fear, helplessness, no longer that power. It's like when one is young, so many one can do something with energy in any situation. Doesn't matter. You have no money, you have your energy. You're in danger, you can run. When you're old, you can't run. You can't run. We remember the stories from some devotees in Mayapur whose ancestors came from Bangladesh. Then at the time of the partition, they were running away, and then the grandparents couldn't run. And they told the younger generation, go, just leave us, because, you know, go ahead. And it obviously did not meet with a good end. So that is the situation. One loses one's power, and but with that also, as Vaishnavas, we're not only looking at fear, we're just going deeper in that sense of dependence on Krishna. Because even with all the strength of the world, even with all the power of youth, we still depend on Krishna. There's still no guarantee that all our powers and all our strength will save us in a time of danger. Only Krishna is the shelter at all times. We are always weak. We are always prone to be defeated. Parabhavas-tavata-bhuda-jato, always prone to parabhavas, defeat in this material world. So therefore, in old age, that false sense of security disappears, and one is forced to just take shelter of Krishna more. But that's why sometimes we see in old age people suddenly start to, who were throughout life quite renounced in a way, not like interested in so many material arrangements, suddenly they want some material shit. So that is there, that we need that shelter, but the real shelter is Krishna. So more and more we must act upon that dependence. It's not just a matter of like saying it. Philosophically, for so many years, we're just living with a philosophy. And we begin to know that philosophy inside out. And then we repeat it, but we don't live accordingly. And that's like, it takes a lifetime to come to the point where I finally say, okay, I'm going to act according to this now. I'm going to actually accept it and just make it like what I base my life on. That's very difficult. That is the big issue, that so much philosophy, lots of, every day lectures, every day reading, studying for so many years. We know so many things about this philosophy. But are we living it? That is the big question. Living it means trusting in Krishna. That's why it's very interesting that you see in Vedic culture, old people would go into the forest. Say, okay, young people going into the forest, no problem, you know, you can sort of survive in the forest for a night, you know. There are snakes, there are all kinds of wild animals, maybe tigers, wolves, who knows, bears, spiders. Australia's got all kinds of nice little small creepy creatures. So, danger. So it's quite amazing that old people would go into the forest. I mean, we see the forest not as like a friendly place. It's harsh, the forest. And it's an old place. Now you want, like, in your old age, some comfort. Right? Nice, you know, like, not so austere anymore as before. And so it's quite mind-blowing, actually. It's easy to say, but it's quite mind-blowing that in old age people would go into these conditions of austerity. And sometimes when I see the sadhus in India, you know, whatever they are, right, I'm saying, but you see their austerity. Because I don't know if you ever slept on a railway platform on a piece of cloth. Some of you in India have, you know. I used to sleep on the railway platforms and it's not so comfortable. You don't really get like good sleep. I guarantee you that, sort of. So that sense of austerity, it's not possible. It's not possible to adopt on the basis of a philosophy. That kind of austerity is only adopted after a life that has been simple and austere. Then you can do it. Now India is losing that. In Prabhupada's time, the Indian community was very simple. They would come and they would just put one carpet in a room. They get one room and 15 people all sleep on the dari. Just one carpet, sleep on the dari. Now forget it, you know. Now they book 10 rooms with attached bath and everything. And if there's no attached bath, they complain like anything. The times have changed. But with that, we lose the dependence on the Lord. When a tsunami hit India, 7,000 people died. So the whole world was expressing sympathy, saying that, oh, such a disaster, we'll send help. And India said, no, it's okay. It's okay. We can deal with this. We can deal with this. It's all right. It's not like, and of course, you know, 7,000 people in India is not like such a big disaster. You can say, of course, they have people enough. What is 7,000? That's one approach. But no, not in that way. But more in the way that they've seen big disasters. 100,000 people died in a Gujarat earthquake. Right? 100,000 people in one earthquake, boom, in Gujarat. In India, I have seen India at the time of this of these calamities. Right? And there comes out a spirit of such faith, right? And such acceptance, that sense of acceptance. That is something very deep. Okay. Bhagavan Kaitya. It's like whatever his will, it's his will, his plan. That acceptance is very, very deeply ingrained in the culture. That is the spine of India. That is the strength of India. And that is something special in terms of the karma. There's no doubt about it. That is one feature. So that feature is to be strengthened in this movement and to be invoked in all the members of the Hare Krishna movement, that sense of dependence, whatever happens, Lord, the will of the Lord. And the Lord is good. And not only is it the will of the Lord, but the Lord is all good. Therefore, whatever happens, it is good. It is good. We just can't always understand it, how it is good. But you remember the story that Prabhupada told about the king who was playing with the arrow, it had a sharp head, cut a piece of his finger, and it was a drama. The royal finger had been cut, a disaster. And one minister said, no, Your Majesty, it is good. It is good. Yes, Your Majesty, everything ultimately has a purpose and it is good. The king didn't like it and jailed the minister. Then after some time the king went on a hunting excursion, but during that hunting excursion was kidnapped by some dacoits who were doing a dark ritual and were trying to sacrifice him to some deity. But when they found that a piece of the finger was missing, said, oh no, he's not suitable for sacrifice. So they let him go. So then the king said, yes, the minister was right. And on the way back he came and to the palace, immediately gave order to release the minister. And then the king spoke, said, this is amazing. You were right. Said, but one thing. He said, everything is all good, but you wound up in jail, although you gave good advice. So how is everything all good? No, the minister said, no, Your Majesty, that was very good. Because otherwise, if I would not have been in jail, I would have been with you on the hunting trip. And then, after they released you, they would have sacrificed me. No, it was very good that I was in the jail. Okay, it is a simple story, but it is so. The message is profound. It is easy to dismiss the story as, yes, we know the story. Yes, simple story. But, the truth of the spirit of the story is what it says, the essence. To accept everything as good. To accept Krishna as all good. That takes something. To give up that inner resistance to destiny. Why is this happening? To not get angry and raise a fist at the sky. Or even internally to have some sense of resistance. How can this happen to me? How can my son die? He can. Everyone's son can die, I'm sorry to say. But that's the nature of we can die, a son can die, anybody can die, any moment. That is the nature of the material world. And Krishna understands when and how. Krishna understands when and how it makes sense. From our point of view, it doesn't make sense. Everyone should live at least till 80. Right? That's logical to us. And anything less is a disaster. And even 80 is sad. Right? It is 80 is already sad. But okay, there is some. At least you lived a full life. But anything less than 80 is a drama. Not necessarily so, because we don't know where that person will go now, what that person will do next. Then we make a huge thing about the way that someone leaves. He died so peaceful, surrounded by loving family members, so beautiful. Of course, my grandfather, he just one day stood up and then fell backwards, had a heart attack or something, and it's like just dead on the spot. And my grandmother stood there and said, "Such a beautiful death." She did. She didn't wait at all. Immediately, she said, "Such a beautiful death. No suffering." Okay, so, we may look at this one as better than that one. But that's all from our perspective. Because we're measuring the here and now and cannot see what comes after. Oh, it's better there was no suffering. Yeah, but maybe there was no suffering. But what comes then after? We cannot see. We cannot oversee. So our judgment of what is better and what is worse, it's hard to actually relate it to reality. Because we see only this part. And then we don't see what's next. Maybe, oh yes, we suffered a lot now. You read in the Bhagavatam about Chitraketu, who was cursed and had to become Vritasura and had to suffer so much. And then we see all that suffering was a benediction, because he burned up so much and then he was pure and eligible to go back. So in this case, the suffering before death was better than, he had such a beautiful death, he didn't suffer. So it's our understanding of good and bad is very superficial. And then when we are faced with the arrangements of the Lord, we can't understand, how can he do this? This is too much. But from a bigger perspective, we have to accept the Lord is always all good and is always benedicting every living being. If there's a punishment, it is the punishment of a loving father, not the punishment of a conqueror. So it is described in Bhagavatam. The distinction, the punishment of the conqueror, put the boot on the throat, hey, you rat, I will crush you. Or the punishment of the father, look, I don't like to do this, but now it's enough. So the father may also punish, but in the hope that he can improve the conditions of the son. So the father's intention is good. He's good. He's always interested in the benefit of his son. So that is Krishna. And one has to have that faith in Krishna. Then we can turn to Krishna. Then we can have dependence on Krishna. If we don't accept that Krishna is all good, how can we depend on Krishna? Then we think, well, this is Krishna, I want this, but I don't want that. And then our relationship with Krishna becomes one, or a selective one. I like these things you sent me, but I don't like those. Krishna, please don't send me this. Please don't. And so on. Then we approach Krishna with a fruitive intent. And then we think we are more intelligent. Then we rely on our own intelligence. We are understanding. Yes, yes. This is better. That is worse. But the truth is, from our perspective, we see such a short little stretch of time. What do we know? It's just like the road. I go for a walk. Maybe the first part, it looks very nice. But when I go around the corner, maybe it will not be nice. How do I know? I don't know. I'm a stranger in this place. I don't know everything. Don't know what I'll get on the way. In the same way, we are a stranger in the universe. And we only see a short portion of the road in this strange universe. We have no idea what will come. So how can we judge what is good and what is bad? Left or right? Left is dirty, dark, broken streets, broken houses, old. Right, beautiful houses. Left or right? Many people will go right. But then in right, after 300 meters, it changes. And then you turn into a garbage dump. It stinks. Right? Whereas left, you know, you go through the bad part and then you come to a beautiful park. So how can we judge these things? But we are judging. We are judging based on impressions. You know, will you marry me? You know what I mean? Will you? Yeah. Will you marry me? I mean, you have no idea who you're marrying, right? That you find out later, right? At the time that you approach a person, right? You look at that person, and for some reason, you are ready to spend your whole life with this person. Have you studied this person? Have you done a complete analysis? Yeah? At least some. Did you get a psychological assessment? Did you get a health assessment? Did you get the astrology charts? Did you do a security check on them? Did you check out their ancestry? Yeah? Did you check out the whole ancestry to see what's the history in the family? Sometimes it's interesting. It's like I experienced, I won't get into the detail, but there was one person who became involved in India, who became involved in a murder. Yeah? Did it actually. And then later on we found out that he was in the family lineage of the murderer of Gandhi. Wow. That's interesting. It's just interesting detail, colorful. So did you do the full security check on a person? You know, I mean, you're gonna live with this person? You're gonna be spending 24 hours a day with this person? And you're just marrying on the strength of an impression? So this is how we live. We make decisions based on impressions. And these impressions are colored by our mind. Nicely decorated with flowers and so on. Huh? Do you see these things on the internet? You know, you have a picture and then you can dress it up with something. Yeah? You have programs that dress it up with different things. That's the mind. The picture of reality, picture of what we see, and then we dress it up. Right? And then in the end, that's the impression. And based on that, we make decisions. So, we begin by becoming sober in the Bhagavad, and then towards the end, we are purified. And that's why it says, one should not be matas versus tukantiya sitasna sukadukada. One should not be unnecessarily disturbed by happiness or distress. Who's disturbed by happiness? Are you disturbed by happiness? You have that problem? I'm so disturbed. I'm so happy. So it's a strange verse if you think about disturbed by happiness. Of course, once we are familiar with the philosophy, we understand that this happiness is temporary. So do not just, it's so wonderful, I'm so happy. And I got $1,000. $1,000. I'm over the moon. Okay, you got $1,000, we'll be finished in less than 1,000 minutes, $1,000 goes quick, right? So temporary happy. So that soberness is the result of deep philosophical understanding. And then the next thing is where we have to become deeply dependent on Krishna. So he has his plan. As he desires, it is good. That's the message of the Bhagavatam. That's not simple. Not simple to realize. Something to meditate on, and then maybe when we're old and we are forced to let go, maybe then finally one day I say, okay, just depend. Maybe 2 minutes before 12, maybe just before we die, I say, okay, Krishna, all right then, I'll let go of all this false security. Maybe then. But better earlier. Better now. Okay. Any questions? Any comments?
How to be consistent in chanting?
How to be consistent in chanting? The first thing is that we must understand that the chanting is the greatest gift. The more we understand about the power and the mercy that is connected to chanting, the more we'll be motivated to chant. Like for example, the name is not different from Krishna, but the name is more merciful than any other manifestation of Krishna. If you offend the deity of Krishna, then you can purify that by the chanting of the holy name. So in this way, the holy name is more merciful than the deity form of Krishna. And therefore, we first have to philosophically, thoroughly understand what this holy name is. Abhinatva nami namino, non-different from Krishna. Then we'll get more motivation to chant. And then we have to look at the long term, not at the immediate result. It's okay. So I'm chanting with the long term in mind. And when I'm chanting with the long term in mind, yes, then I don't expect that it will just fix everything today. But I know that in the long term, it will bring all benefit. So in this way, first one has to have a vision. And then by regular practice, chanting becomes so much part of our life that it would feel like if you don't chant, it feels like you're not dressed or something. It feels like something is missing. Something is just not there. So, first, regular practice on the basis of philosophy and association. And then comes more and more on the strength of realization. So, build up good habits. Live a life of regulation. When we only live impulsive, you know, we just don't know what we're doing, just whatever comes in our mind, then chanting will be very difficult. So, make a regulated program. And every day, I do these and these things in the morning. These are my morning activities. Then chanting will become part of a regular practice. Then you can maintain.
And one last thing, while chanting, where should I focus? Shall I focus on deity's form?
No. Focus on hearing. Okay. The focus is on the ear.
Okay.
So the essence, Prabhupada said, attentive chanting means to hear oneself chanting. So we should hear.
Krishna, Hari and Rama, only the words I should hear. That.
You should just hear the words. But automatically, if you say Krishna, there is an idea, right? Who is Krishna? You may see him at the same time, in the mind. You know, as soon as you say Krishna, I see some sort of three-band form with peacock feather, yellow dhoti, Krishna. And that goes deeper. So the seeing comes automatically, not that we have to try. Hare Krishna, now I have to see Krishna. No. Just put the focus on the ear. And whatever, in terms of seeing, in terms of feeling, will come, it will come on its own. Thank you.
His Holiness Kadam Karan Swami Maharaj ki jai. Ki jai.